As the days lengthen and sunlight strengthens, our thoughts turn to spring, and the first job of the new garden year is tree care. I have with me this morning a frequent guest of Garden Life, Kyle Nagy, Superintendent and Orchard Operations Manager of the U of I Organic Agriculture Center here in Sandpoint. Welcome, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back. I look back and we've talked, this will be the fifth time.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes. It's great having you in. I'm already getting a lot of tree questions from people wondering what to do, so I'll ask them of you.
It's that time of year.
Yes, go to the expert. So is it common for a university to have an organic orchard?
I wouldn't say it's common, but there's quite a few that have orchards and organic orchards, especially the universities that are working on apple breeding programs, because they like to see how different varieties produce under different management techniques and management styles. So yeah, there's definitely some spread out across the nation. There's several in California, Washington, and New York has some as well. So,
are they usually organic or are they just conventional?
It's a mix. A lot of them will have some blocks of each just so they can compare the management styles. And some will do better under a conventional, where some do well under organic. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I only found one organic orchard commercial in Idaho and one in Washington, which really surprised me.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of maybe market size orchards, so maybe not the large scale like acres and acres of trees, but yeah, there's quite a few small organic producers in the area, especially over in Washington, in the central Washington area, and then we do have Mountain View Orchard, which is up by Port Hill, and that was purchased from the original owners years ago, and I actually helped the new owners with their organic certification. So,
I did read that they're pending, that their organic certification is pending, so that's awesome. Why heirloom fruits? Why is it important to save these varieties?
With the interesting thing about these is a lot of these, there's so much genetics coming from both parents that even if you made the same cross between two apples, it's not going to produce the exact same variety. So when these varieties are lost, we can't just rebreed them to create that same variety because there's so much genetic variation in there. So once one of these known varieties is lost, it's gone forever.
Yeah. When you say genetic verification, you're talking about grafting?
To come up with a new apple variety, you need to have a pollinated seed. So when those genetics from the two parents come together, there's a lot of different genetic combinations there. So every seed in that apple is going to produce a different tree. So so once you get to that one seed that produced that apple that you liked, the only way to propagate that is then through cutting and grafting, where you could take those same two parents and breed them all over again, and you'd never get that exact same apple again.
That is so interesting. I knew they didn't come true to seed, but I didn't realize that was true, too.
Yeah, apples have the same genetic characteristic as humans, which is extreme heterozygosity, which means it's just there's so much that goes into that.
All varied.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Lost Apple book from Keoki Press right now. David Ben Scott are searched all over for it's just the Pacific Northwest, and the history is so rich.
Yeah, David's great. He's done so much research into the lost apples and everything, and he can tell you what apples were available back when it was being homesteaded and that kind of thing. So it's really neat the work he's done and the exploration he's done to find some of these varieties that we thought were completely extinct.
In your title, it says Agriculture Center. So what are your other crops?
Our primary is our orchard crops, but the agricultural center, we're open to all kinds of different research. So we've had some vegetable research in the past. We had a team that was looking at an insect pest of huckleberries. So we had some huckleberries planted out there. Don't get too excited about huckleberries, though, because it's still a tough one.
But it is. They've been studying it for years, and they still can't crack that code.
Yeah, yep. It's a tough one, and there's so many different variables that can go into that, especially in our area where we see them mostly grown at elevation, then different plant communities up there, so there's different interactions between the root systems and the mycorrhizae and fungus and everything.
And
so,
everything, yes. Yeah. Tree. We 1 year we would pick up bear scat and think, oh, with seeds in it, think, oh, this is it. Nothing.
Oh, yeah. It could be a heartbreaker for sure.
It is. You have a summer intern program. Are those guys and gals just agriculture students?
We've gotten a range of everything. So we have some horticulture and urban agriculture interns in the past. We've had agricultural education, agronomy. So we get a little bit of everything. And we really try and provide a very broad perspective of small-scale agriculture for our interns. So we have our around a little smaller than a quarter acre market garden. So they have a market gardener, Lee Burkaw with Blue Fingers Farms, comes and works with them 2 days a week through the whole summer. So the produce out of that garden, the interns get to use. And then the rest of that goes to the Bonner Community Food Bank, which is great. We have the orchard for them to learn tree fruit production and what goes into that, and pest scouting and pruning and all that good stuff. And then we also have livestock on site. So we have a multi-species rotational grazing program where we have sheep and chickens in intensive rotating pasture. So the sheep are rotating every 2 to 3 days with the chickens in a mobile coop going right behind them. So our interns get some vegetable production, some fruit production, and some livestock experience.
I also saw on your webpage about the term regenerative agriculture. Explain to me what that is. Is it similar to permaculture or?
Yeah. Regenerative agriculture is a fairly new term in the broad scheme of things, but that was actually a topic that I tried to tackle in my final project of my master's program, where what I was looking at was how regenerative agriculture is being defined and who's defining it. And what I found was that there was a wide variation between the researchers, how they were using regenerative agriculture, the producers who are actually on the ground doing it, and then also the nonprofits that are coming up with certifications to try and to push this movement forward.
Is your orchard kind of an example of it, with the animals, with the fruit, or the, what do they call it, crop trees? Or
yeah, so we're kind of working in that direction, trying to add integrate some livestock into our production scheme. But it's a tough one because there's all kinds of food safety regulations and everything. So we have to be thinking about that when we design these systems. But regenerative agriculture comes down mostly to, from what I found, it's soil-centric. So it's everything comes back to the soil. The nutrition we get out of the foods, the health of the plant, all of it, their ability to combat pests and diseases, that all is coming from the soil. So that's my main takeaway from regenerative agriculture.
That's with organic garden. It's always, is the plant healthy? If the plant's healthy, it'll be able to fight off problems. But
exactly.
If it's not, there's something wrong with your soil.
Yep. And if you want healthy plants, you need a healthy soil.
That's for sure. That's interesting. So it's the soil you're looking at with regenerative. And that makes sense with the title. So without further ado, let's go to pruning. Let's talk a little bit about pruning. Why? Why do we have to prune?
Yeah, so pruning is, when I'm pruning, I always prune for a goal. So when I'm working in my fruit trees, I'm always pruning for fruit production. So I'm trying to think of where the fruit is going to be on the tree. One of the big things we're always thinking of in the orchard is we want a lot of sunlight to get through that canopy, and we also want the wind to be able to blow through that canopy. So we want a nice open canopy in our fruit trees. Number one, they need that sunlight to hit the fruit to fully ripen and mature. And we want it to be nice and open and airy so that when we do have any morning dew or precipitation events, we want those leaf surfaces to dry out as fast as possible. The longer your leaf surfaces are wet, the more likely you are to have a bacterial or fungal infection take hold.
That's what happens in my yard. I don't have much airflow, and I'd like to put a big fan out there. But we did put some grids, some pig panels and cow panels, and opened the fencing up. So that helped a lot.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's amazing how much good ventilation can really help.
Yes, it makes all the difference, especially for fruit. Is there a difference between pruning for fruit and pruning for health, or is it pretty much the same thing?
When I'm pruning for fruit, I'm definitely trying to look at my fruit spurs and see where that fruit is going to be developing through the tree. Where when I'm pruning for health, the first thing I'll do is go through and look for anything that's dead or dying or diseased or anything like that. And then I'm also trying to think about the weight on these branches as well. You want to make sure that it's a strong enough branch to support all that weight we're asking it to support, especially in fruit trees when we're asking that branch to hold on to all that extra fruit in the season. But even the weight of the foliage can make a big difference. And if you're in a windy site, you have to consider that as well, because that wind on a very full branch, you could end up with breaking and cracking and damage like that.
When you do, of course, straight up grown is one thing, but when you do the umbrella pruning, how do you keep those angles from collecting water and rotting in the inside there?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because a lot of the time it's just how the tree grows at that angle, because you want to not have any of those pockets that can collect water up there. But a lot of the time it's just up to how the branches are coming out of that trunk.
It's kind of out of your hand.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You just try and do as much as you can.
Yes. That's something I didn't realize when I started my fruit trees in my yard, and I kind of messed it up a little bit. Can you prune to increase growth or to decrease growth? Is there a difference between the two?
So I've always heard that pruning is the best fertilizer. So it's definitely pruning can help you produce growth, but it's usually not a way to decrease growth.
Okay.
I guess it's a way to decrease the size of the tree, but it's just an annual job to keep it at that size. So it's more of a maintenance pruning rather than decreasing the growth.
Okay. Talk about thinning the fruit once they're set.
Yeah, so thinning is a very important part of orcharding, and it's one of the most labor-intensive parts as well. So when those fruit clusters come out, the flower cluster comes out, there's usually around 5 flowers at each cluster, and we wait for those to get pollinated, and then if we let all those go, we'll end up with 5 small apples beginning to grow there. And when they're the size of maybe a nickel or a quarter or so, we're going through and we're taking each one of those clusters and thinning it down to a single apple. So what you're taking off 4 out of 5 apples at the beginning of season. So you're taking off 80% of your fruit right away, which seems counterintuitive. But the fruit that you leave there is going to be larger. It's going to have less pest and disease problems. It's going to store better. It's going to make for a better apple in the end.
Yeah, the apples will grow, and they'll grow next to each other and rot next
exactly.
to each
yeah.
other.
Yeah, when you have apples up against each other, that's creating the perfect place for an insect to make a home or for a disease to take hold in there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Let's talk about timing. When do you do your pruning?
Yeah, so in our apple orchard, we're doing all of our pruning in the second half of February into the first half of March. And the reason we wait so late in the year is like years like last year, where we had that extreme cold where we hit that negative 20. If we would have pruned back in December and then we had that really harsh cold, we could end up with tip dieback from where we pruned. So by waiting later into the year, Hopefully we're past that really frigid temperature and we're less likely to have cold injury after we're done pruning.
Do you prune your ornamental trees as well, or what else do you prune on the property?
Yeah, we do some pruning of our ornamental trees and then just the landscaping around the building. But yeah, that's mostly just aesthetic pruning. So some maintenance pruning, trying to keep them in the right size and shape for the space that they're in.
One of the times you were in, you said you wait till the spring to prune your raspberries?
Yeah, so through the winter, the dying canes, the ones that produced the last summer, are still sending carbohydrates from those canes back down into the root system that can then be utilized the following spring as the new canes are coming up. But if we cut those off in the fall, we're losing that carbohydrate that's getting sent back to the root system.
The energy's going down.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it really depends on what else you have going on, because sometimes springs are just so crazy, you don't have time to do your raspberries then. But if you have time in the fall to do it, I'd say whenever it's convenient to do. And raspberries are so hard to kill.
You can't kill them, I swear. Do you have blueberries?
We don't have any blueberries out there, but we have some great blueberry growers around here over at Riley Creek and Shingle Mill.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Blackberries?
We don't have any blackberries. Blackberries and raspberries, when they're together, can be an issue because there's some diseases that the blackberries tend to be carriers of that don't affect the blackberries too much, but if that disease gets into the raspberries, it can really cause problems for your raspberries.
So there's different kinds of pruning too. Let's talk a little bit about what the different kinds are.
Yeah, when I'm out in the orchard, I'm usually thinking of thinning versus heading cuts. So a thinning cut is when we're pruning back to a dominant bud that's going to be able to take over the growth that's being sent out that way. And that's if we want to direct a branch or a leader in a single direction, where a heading cut would be a cut back to a weaker bud or a point that can't take all that energy that's being sent to it and put it in one direction. So once that energy gets there, it splits out, and that's how you can induce some lateral branching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Header. Tell me again, thinning?
Thinning versus heading cuts.
Okay. Do you, how much should you prune off? Is there a formula for how much you can prune off a tree?
Not really. It really depends. Every tree is its own case. So it depends on the goals of what you're trying to do. If you're trying to keep it compact in a space versus early on letting it really spread out and everything. But it's a balance for sure.
Mm-hmm. Rich was on one time and he said it's just like you're pruning back what you did last year. You're kind of just matching what you've already done.
For sure, yeah. If you're doing maintenance pruning, you're just trying to keep it in that same size. Yeah, that's the right path to take.
Is there any care you need to take with the trunk or anything when you prune? Do you paint white paint or anything like that?
No. So it used to be advised that you use the black tar to go over pruning wounds, but that has kind of gotten turned on its head in the last couple of decades, where they're now saying to just make a good clean cut on an angle that water's not going to rest on, and then just let it close up naturally. What they found is that black tar can actually seal in some pests and pathogens and then create a perfect little spot for them to do their damage and reproduce.
That point about the cut going down instead of up where it's going to catch the water.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always trying to make my pruning cuts on an angle so that we don't have water sitting on that. Because the water sitting on, as that dries out, it's going to seep down into that wood and cause rot. And then you got all kinds of issues.
Moving on to soil health, because you're regenerative, I'm sure you think a lot about how to improve your soil health. When do you fertilize, or do you fertilize?
Yeah, yep, we fertilize. We use an organic granular fertilizer that's mostly a poultry manure, and we're usually putting that on in April or so. Being an organic fertilizer, it's a slow release, so we can put on all of our fertilizer at one point in the year. If we're using a conventional fertilizer, you might want to split up that fertilization a couple of times, maybe April and then June or something like that, just so it's not getting all that nitrogen all at once.
Okay. So organic fertilizers, of course, are a lot less... What's the word?
Yeah, they're just slower to break down in your soil yes. and become plant available.
Exactly. Do you have cover crops?
So we like having a nice cover crop in the orchard. We've experimented with a bunch of different things over the years. What I've kind of landed on is a Dutch white clover. It's just a nice low ground cover. We don't want a really tall ground cover, especially around the base of the trees, because that cover is what those vertebrate pests, the voles and mice and those guys, they want that cover. So we don't want to give them that cover up close to our trees where they can do their damage. So a low ground cover is good. I like the clover just because it's a nitrogen fixer. But a lot of orchards use just a short fescue, a grass or something like that in the orchard.
Mm-hmm. You spoke one time about pea gravel around the trees. You find that to be very effective.
Yeah. I like a pea gravel mulch around the base of the trees. We're usually doing about a 3-foot diameter circle at the base of the trees. And we don't maintain it as much on the older trees, but it's really helpful on the younger trees. The pea gravel can help in a number of different ways. Number one, with the competition from other weeds and everything around the base of those trees. We don't want weed roots competing with the moisture and nutrients that those tree roots need when they're young. And then it can also help with our rodents, the voles in the winter that like to cruise right along that soil snow level. Mm-hmm. They'll go right up to a young tree and chew the bark around the base and can kill it quickly. By having the pea gravel there, it seems to make it so they can't have an established tunnel going right to the trunk of the tree because that pea gravel's so loose, it just kind of caves in on them. So we don't get those tunnels going right into the trunk of the trees where they're doing their damage.
Another benefit to the pea gravel.
Yeah, definitely. And then any weeds that germinate in there, the annual weeds, they're always really easy to pull out of that pea mm-hmm. gravel as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you planning to hire honeybees for pollination this year?
Yeah, yep. So we've brought in honeybees for the last several years. We use McClary Apiary. They're out of western Montana, and they run something like 4,000 or 5,000 hives around western Montana, eastern Washington, and north Idaho. So We used to use orchard bees, blue mason bees, but that's a solitary bee, and we had a hard time getting them to stick around year after year. The mason bees are really great because they're such a prolific pollinator. If a honey bee will pollinate 100 flowers in a day, a mason bee will pollinate 1,000. It's really amazing the work they do, but it was just tough getting them to stick around. And with the honey bees, when we're bringing them in, they're coming in a box with 80,000 of their relatives. So it's not as much of a numbers game at that point. It's just more the better.
Guaranteed pollination.
Yeah, yep, for sure.
We had neighbors that had bees in town here one year, and we have never had cherries like that.
Oh, yeah, yep, it's amazing.
It is. They really do the job. Do you have native plants planted around the orchard then?
Yeah, yes. Yep. Not directly inside the orchard, but around the perimeter of the property. We planted a number of different flowering shrubs years ago, and we tried to select different species that bloomed at different times so that our pollinators will have some blooms throughout the whole season. But yeah, our native pollinators are used to making use of what we have here.
That'll draw in the native pollinators.
Yeah, for sure.
The bees, the mason bees. And finally, let's talk about pest ID and pest controls. Do you do winter sprays?
So we do a dormant spray, and I like to do our dormant spray right when we're done with pruning. And what we're using is a neem oil. And the neem oil is nice for a dormant spray. It's a little too thick to spray through the summer. It can cause like a sunburn or sun scald on the trees if it's too thick and it's too hot. But when we're doing our dormant oil spray right after we're done pruning, so like end of March, before the tree's really coming out of dormancy, that's a great time to hit them. And what that's doing is mostly just trying to coat any overwintering eggs or anything like that so that they're unable to respire and just suffocates them, really.
Yes, yes. Okay, one question I got is an organic fix for the apple worm. And it was a gal who has her favorite crab apple tree, and those worms get in and totally destroy the fruit.
Yeah.
What's your answer to that?
So apple worms can be a couple of different things. They could be a coddling moth larva, which is the bane of every apple orchardist's existence. They're the worst one for us, for sure. But it could also be the larva of the apple maggot fly. Those guys, the apple maggot flies, are attracted to that red of the ripening apple. So one of the ways to combat that is using a type of a clay spray that dulls the color of the apple. It's kind of a gray at that point. Then the females are less attracted to lay their eggs under the skin of that apple. The coddling moth is a difficult one. We do some mating disruption in the orchard, just trying to cut down on the number that we're working with every year. We can also use some sprays, like a spinosad spray can be effective against coddling moth as well.
Can you trap them? Are there traps for them too?
There's traps, but the pheromone traps are mostly just to identify when they're active in your area.
The count.
Yes, yep. Mm-hmm. They are a different one, or a difficult one. I spoke to someone up in Bonner's Ferry, though, that and this wouldn't work in our orchard because we're about 8 acres now. But he, in his home orchard, he had one of those electric bug zappers. And he said that worked really well for cutting down on the amount of worm damage he had in his apples.
Do the bees go for that?
The bees, no, they're not going to go into that. This is mostly for night pests. Yeah. So okay. The moths are
moving at night.
Yeah, moths are out in the night and they're looking for their mates. So that's a good way to get them.
You used to have a spraying schedule on your website. Are you going to do that this year again?
We've done that on and off. A lot of it's based on weather, and we don't have our weather station up right now, so we're going to be working on that. That's right.
You're watching temperatures.
Yeah,
that's what you were doing.
It always comes to temperature, sure. Because all these different pests and diseases, they grow at different rates at different temperatures. So. There's ways to really pinpoint when they're going to be the most destructive, and that's when we try to hit them. But we don't have our weather station right now because we had that windstorm come through late September last year, and that damaged a few of our buildings, unfortunately. Our sheep barn, it tore the entire roof off of our sheep barn. The power for our weather station came through the sheep barn. So now we're without a sheep barn or a weather station currently.
I remember that storm. It just hit little spots.
Yeah. Yep. In 10 minutes, it did a lot of damage.
That's crazy. I never thought of you guys out there. I knew it was going up to Schweitzer. Some places got hit pretty hard.
And it was a really tough timing for us. End of September, our trees are loaded with fruit. And we ended up losing more than half of our fruit, in that 10-15 minute time span. So that's unfortunately why we had to cancel our public apple tasting this past fall.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, that's always our favorite event. But we just lost so many apples, we wouldn't have had enough to really showcase what we have.
Well, shoot, Mother Nature is truly the boss.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Speaking of showcasing your apples, I love all your pictures on the webpage, and then you can hit it and find out when they were named and all that. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, yep. It's amazing the history behind all these apples and everything. And I like to think that we have a lot of apples. We're in that like 65 to 70 range. You look at some of these other orchards, yes, and David Benscott or yes. what they're doing, but like the Temperate Orchard Conservancy over in Oregon, I think they have somewhere around 5,000 varieties. So
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. 60 doesn't seem that much when there's 5,000 right down the road there.
Hey, that's a lot. 60 is a lot. You got an amazing place out there. What do you have going this fall? What are your events? Or this summer? What are your events there at the the center?
Yeah, we have all kinds of stuff. Our building's back up and running, so we have our Master Gardener classes started up end of January here. So we're getting those going, and that's 2 days a week. We have a bunch of 4-H events that are starting to come up. And then we have a grafting class that we're going to be holding late March. I believe that's the 26th. That's one that we already purchased rootstock for. So we'll have rootstock for all the participants. And then we'll also have a bunch of different scion wood from our orchard. So so there's all kinds of different varieties available for that.
Sign me up.
Yeah, no, that should be
a good class. March 27th?
March 26th, I believe.
26th, okay.
I don't believe the registration is open for that yet, but it'll be coming out through extension here shortly.
Okay, great. Your building is repaired, big building?
Yep. We had some water damage from that freeze event that we had last January. So we got that back up together in September. So it was a long process, but we're glad that we're all back together and everything.
Such a beautiful building.
Yeah, definitely is.
I had you on in the middle of the summer last year, and we talked about all the damage from that cold snap. Did you end up losing any trees?
We didn't end up losing any trees, and I credit a lot of that to the thick blanket of snow that we had on the ground when that happened. And I was just talking to somebody recently that if we hit that negative 20 again right now when we have no snow on the ground, I think the losses would be significantly worse.
Well, that's great. You didn't lose much. It sure looked rough. At the beginning of the year. Okay, well, thank you so much, Kyle, for coming in.
Yeah.
And do you have anything else to add? Anything we missed?
Let's see. We have the Heritage Orchard Conference.
Okay.
That's our monthly webinar series, started in October. This is our fifth year of doing it as a webinar series. We have some great speakers on there. Next month, or in February here, we have Tiana DuPont from WSU. She's going to be presenting on managing orchards for soil health. That's going to be a great presentation.
A webinar?
Yep, that's a webinar. It's
open
free
to anybody.
Yep, you just have to get online and register, and you'll get sent the link in your email. And then you can also watch the recorded versions of that and all of our past webinars. So I think we have more than 30 recorded webinars for viewing, and there's some real gems in there that I'm sure you'll enjoy.
Great. That sounds great. Give us your contact information and all that stuff here to close out.
So we're located over on North Boyer, just north of the Bonner County Fairgrounds, 10881 North Boyer. My email address is knagy@uidaho.edu. Feel free to reach out anytime you have any questions on your fruit trees. One thing I forgot to mention in... I believe it is Thursday, March 6th, I'm going to be doing a presentation at the East Bonner County Library, and that's going to be establishing a home orchard with heritage varieties. So if you're interested in starting up a home orchard, that'd be a great class for you to attend and get some ideas on the recommendations and considerations that you need to make.
Great. I'm glad you're going through the library. That's been a great resource.
Yeah. Yep. Great team over there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Kyle.
Thanks for having me on again.
We're going to have a little surprise later on, and thanks again.
Yeah.
Good to have you. We're back at Garden Life Morning Show here, and we're out in Kyle's orchard. This is Kyle Nagy with the Idaho Organic Agriculture Center.
Yep.
And we're out here in the tree field in the orchard. I got Carrie Kresge here on the mic. Say hi, Carrie.
Hi.
And so, Kyle, tell us what's the history of this orchard?
Yeah, so the first trees were planted back in 2008.
This entire property was originally owned by a nonprofit called Center for Organic Studies. And that was a nonprofit that was started by Dennis Pence, the former CEO and founder of Coldwater Creek. And he established an orchard because he missed, he grew up in Ohio and he missed having all those amazing heritage varieties that are more more readily available back in the Midwest. So he wanted a place that, that he could pick some of those apples that he remembered picking at his grandparents' house.
The apple situation became very grim when it was just the red delicious and then the yellow delicious, and then people went, what is going on? Why are apples all of a sudden don't taste very good?
Yeah, yep. And a lot of those modern varieties, some of them, they've just been bred to be very easy to grow and they ship really well, but they might not be the tastiest apples.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they really aren't. Why are you here?
So I've been on site since, 2011, and I've been the orchard manager ever since then. So when I first started here, we had around 270 trees in the orchard, and now we're up to a little over 650 trees. And we also have about 1,000 feet of raspberries that we open up to U-pick in the summer. So yeah, it's been a real amazing opportunity being able to experiment with all these amazing varieties.
That's terrific. So the U-pick with the raspberries is, do you weigh them and people?
Yeah, we just have, it's
just
an honor
like the
system.
Blueberries,
yeah,
yes.
Yep. So we have a tent with a scale and a cash box and people can come and go and pick as they please.
Are there quite a few different varieties of raspberries there?
We just have two main varieties out here. Our real staple is Boyne. It's a summer bearing red raspberry. It's a good one for making preserves and that kind of thing. And then we also have a fall gold raspberry. But the issue with the fall gold is they're putting on their larger crop right towards the end of summer, and that seems to be right at that same time that the yellow jackets are out there looking for that last burst of sugar.
Sure.
So it seems like they take one bite out of each berry rather than finishing an entire berry. So
we've got a fall blooming raspberry too, and we love it because you don't have any real sweet fruit that time of year. But yes, the bees can compete. There's no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's walk. We're looking at this orchard. And so this is the older orchard?
Yeah, yep. Oldest? So we're walking along our we call it Field 1. This is our oldest block of trees. At the far west end, we have our oldest trees that were planted around 2008. And then they were planted in batches of around 50 to 60. Until they got out to this around 270 trees. And that's all of our varieties that we grow are in this main block here. And then we've expanded out into some of our other fields with varieties that did well here and that people were excited to have. So there's definitely varieties that don't thrive here in North Idaho. And there's some that do really well.
You've got them pruned so short. Is that for picking?
Yeah, so we're on a semi-dwarfing rootstock, so we're only, these trees, if we just let them go, they would only get around 15 feet tall or so, 15 to 18. But we're trying to keep them in that 12 to 15 foot range, just for ease of operations, for our pruning,
everything,
our picking, spraying, just keeping them in that an area that's much easier for us to manage them.
I bet it's hard for you to hold off pruning when it's so nice out.
and I'm sure we'll get dumped on with some snow before we do start pruning here. But there's been years where it's been like this, where it's bare orchard while we're doing our pruning, and then there's been other years where we're out here on snowshoes.
Yes.
So,
yes.
It's not bad when you're on snowshoes. You can reach up a little bit higher into the canopy.
You've got something wrapped around the trunk. What's that about?
Yeah, so what we have is a white plastic wrap that goes around the trunk of our trees. And what that is to prevent sun cracking or sun scald. So when we do have a nice white blanket of snow on the ground and we do have an occasional sunny day in North Idaho, you get the sunlight reflecting off of the snow and then up onto a dark trunk, and that that tissue expands a little bit during the day when it gets warm, and then it gets cold at night and it contracts again and shrinks. And if it does that over and over all winter long, you can develop a crack along the south, southeast, southwest face of that tree. So by putting the white tree wrap on, we're reflecting that light away so that the trunk isn't heating up, and we're not at risk of getting those cracks.
So you just keep it on in the winter?
Yep. We put these on in the fall, and they come off in the spring. And yeah, they can really help. And we do it with the plastic wraps because we're certified organic, but it's also possible to use a white latex paint.
Oh, okay.
And you can water down your paint so it comes off easier in the spring, but just lightening up that dark trunk so that it's not absorbing that heat through the winter.
You see a lot of cracks on fruit trees in
the
winter.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, when I was going to school in Minneapolis, I remember there was a tree, a north-south street, that was planted all with young maple trees, and every one of those maple trees had a crack on that south side because the maple trees also have that thin skin that the fruit trees have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we want to avoid that because those cracks take forever to heal over, and sometimes they never fully heal over.
And bugs love it.
Yeah, bugs and diseases.
So what are you doing now? You're not pruning yet, but what are your tasks right now?
Yeah, right now it's pretty low management at this point. Without the snow on the ground, we're not too worried about the voles out here doing their damage. When we do have snow on the ground, we'll do some scouting to see how much activity we have out here. But in a year like this, the voles aren't doing a whole lot of damage.
So is this the clover?
Yeah, so in this part of the field, we have a perennial mix that was seeded many years ago.
Oh, okay.
And it we let it flower and self-seed every year. So that's a legume mix that has a couple different types of clover, some alfalfa, and some vetch as well.
Nice mix.
Yeah, it's a good mix. I'd advise not going with a mix that has vetch in it, though, or at least not much vetch.
I understand.
Because it turns into a tangled mess when that stuff really gets going.
The DOT uses it on their ditches.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll see vetch all over, but man, it takes over.
Yeah, it sure can.
How do your trees look? Are you happy with everything?
Yeah, there's definitely trees that need some remedial pruning, but we've kept up pretty well on our pruning over the years, so most of our older trees are in pretty good shape. When we get down to our field with the younger trees, we're still doing a lot of training of limbs in these blocks, but they're looking good.
So the young trees you'll train, do you start that first year you plant them, or?
We usually don't start training until around the third year it's in the ground. The first couple of years, I don't really do much pruning at all. Those first few years, I want all that energy that is going, or instead of going to fruit or anything like that, we want that to go to the roots and the shoots, to have a really strong foundation for those young trees. So yeah, we don't do much pruning, and we don't leave any fruit on the trees for the first several years.
Is this your irrigation system?
Yeah, so we have irrigation, drip irrigation to every tree in the orchard. We're usually not turning that on until we're really starting to dry out. So late June, I feel like, is usually when that's coming on. And then we'll irrigate through the whole season, and then we'll usually cut off irrigation mid to late August. We don't want to keep filling them with water as we're getting more precipitation naturally, and then also as those trees are starting to get ready for their winter dormancy.
Right. That's a new one. I didn't know that. I always thought you watered all the way through to winter, but you don't.
Yeah, yep, we cut it off there late August to let some of the moisture leave those branch tips, so that we're not experiencing any of that dieback, tip dieback, when we get the cold season. Because yeah, by the end of August, we're maybe only a month away from our first hard frost, so.
Ooh. We're looking forward to spring now,
yeah,
Kyle.
Yeah, for sure. No, fall frosts in mind right now.
What's happening here? A big open field.
Yeah, so between field one and field two, we have a plot that's probably about 50 feet wide and around 400 feet long. And that is, we use these as our research beds in the orchard. So when we're hosting research that we want to keep protected from wildlife, our deer and everything, we have plots inside the orchard fence so that we can have some different experiments going on in here.
These are produce?
We've done produce trials out here, and this is also where we had some huckleberries planted when they were doing the entomology study, looking at a pest that targets the huckleberry root system.
Right. We walked past that big mound where the garden is. What's that all about?
Yeah, so in our educational market garden, we have what's called a hugel culture bed. And that was a project that was actually an intern's pet project years ago. They had read about this technique and wanted to try it. And we said, we got space, we can try that. So, but it's been really successful for us. So what it is it's a mound planting. So we start out by going into the woods and we find a bunch of rotting logs and that kind of stuff, and we lay those down in a row, and then we stack on top of that with smaller diameter rotting wood until we have a nice kind of long mound of that decaying wood, and then we cover that with compost and topsoil. And the idea is that all that punky wood down in there, water it heavily in the spring so that absorbs it, and then we're not having to water as heavily through the heat of the summer as that wood is just releasing that moisture.
Okay, so you do water in the spring to kind of charge it.
Yeah, charge it up, and, sure. And then yeah, we're not having to do much watering through the rest of the season. As those logs inside there are breaking down, the mound shrinks a little bit every year, so we're always top dressing it with some more compost and soil. But it's been a really great system for us. We really like growing our squash on there because we plant along the top of that mound, and then it trails down on the sides, and it really has a nice effect to it.
I'll bring you some watermelon seeds this year.
There we go.
Let's
we did some of those personal watermelons. Yeah, the Kikus, I believe. Yeah.
I as soon as we can grow watermelons, I'm growing. Tell us about your greenhouse. Do you just start plants there? Are you growing undercover?
So we have our advisory board here at SOAC, and it's mostly made up of local agriculture educators and also ranchers and farmers. And when we were putting together that advisory board, we were trying to figure out how to direct our research at SOAC in a direction that could actually benefit our locals, our northern climate gardeners. And our big takeaway was season extension was one of the limiting factors because we can't have such a short growing season up here. So we put in a couple of structures. We have a 30 by 50 high tunnel, and then we also have a caterpillar tunnel as well, or a cat tunnel. And those are used for our warm season vegetable crops. So that those get planted out with our tomatoes and peppers and green beans and that kind of stuff. And the idea is just to give us an extra week or two on either end of the season so that we can get stuff in the ground sooner, and then we have later into the season to ripen and harvest out there.
Are they all closed in?
Ours are just plastic-covered high tunnels, so we have all the plastic off this time of year because we're not set up for dealing with the snow load and everything. But the plastic will go on here in probably March or so, and then we'll start getting that ready. Our high tunnel that we had tomatoes in last year, our tomatoes were probably 10, 12 feet tall.
Oh, my gosh.
And just a wall of tomatoes in there. So it's really a gorgeous sight when it's all filled up and ready to roll.
I worked a catering job last summer and saw in your refrigerator, or maybe it was a cold space, all that produce was unbelievable. Yeah. How many pounds do you think you got?
So I think we sent somewhere around 3,000 pounds to the food bank this past summer. So it's really great, and I love that our interns get to go through every part of that process. So they're in there planting stuff, taking care of it as it's growing, and then they get to harvest it and wash it and bring it over to the food bank.
Yes.
And see how appreciative everyone is to have that coming in.
Have you tried winter growing in there at all?
We haven't done any of that yet. If we were going to do that, we'd need the double layer of plastic.
Yes.
So we could inflate
insulated
that. Yeah,
little.
Yep, mm-hmm. And insulate it. At this point, we're just extending our season, our usual growing season.
Something for the future.
Yeah, definitely.
I really think four-season gardening is important, and hopefully we'll start learning more about it.
For sure. And there's several small growers in our area that produce all
yes.
through the winter. So
yes.
There's definitely local greens available.
Last summer, community activities, you have... berry picking.
Yeah, we do our Yukon berries.
And your grafting class
yep.
is March?
March 26th, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And then we host all kinds of extension classes out here. So if you get signed up for any of the gardening classes, I believe Jen Jensen over at the extension
yes.
office is going to be doing another lunchtime series. So some small classes to just visit on your lunchtime. I'm sure you'll get out to SOAC and see our place here at some point.
Yes, I definitely will. Last summer you had that stargazing.
Yeah, yep. So we've been working with a local nonprofit called Space Point for the last couple years, and they established a shipping container that has a powerful telescope in it out here, and then they do events throughout the year based on celestial dates. So I know they have a solstice event in June. They're doing a lot of amazing stuff.
Did they come out when the planets all lined up?
I don't think they made
okay.
it out for that.
Gosh.
But
I would have loved to see
that.
That
would have been a
they
good
were all
one,
in
sure.
a line, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so great. I'm so excited to get out here in the field and see what you've got going on here. It's just fruit trees as far as you can. Are they all apples?
The majority of them are apples, but we do have a block of cherry trees. We have sweet, fresh-eating cherries, and then we also have pie cherries. And then we do have some pears out here as well. So
no
yeah.
peaches then.
No peaches. We do have one lone apricot
oh,
tree.
Yes.
But the apricot is one that it always blooms so early. It's usually getting hit by our frost. So since 2011, I think I've only tasted that apricot maybe four times or so. So, but we still have value in that tree. What we watch for and what we use it for is kind of an indicator tree. So we know that when the apricot blooms, that means our cherries are probably about 10 days out. Our apples are about 14 days out. So
okay.
So it's we still get some use out of it even when we're not getting the fruit
sure,
out of it.
Sure. Well, this has been so great, Kyle. Thanks for
yeah.
showing us the farm and the orchard. And tell everybody again where you're located out here.
Yeah, so we're located about 3/4 mile north of the Bonner County Fairgrounds at 10881 North Boyer. We don't have any public open hours right now. It's mostly just when we have events and tours and stuff going on. But if you're interested in coming out, we'll be doing some tours during our bloom in May, and then we'll also have our fall tours and apple tasting. So all kinds of good stuff.
Look forward to it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.
And thanks you too.
Yeah. Yep. This is Sally Pippen.
Sally Pippen.
She's our mascot around here.
Such a pretty girl.
Yep.
Well, thanks so much. This
yeah.
has been great.
Thanks for coming.